Welcome to Business Spotlight on Money Radio WPSE. Business Spotlight is heard weekly at this time on 1450 AM and 107.1 FM. Today's guests are Jake Rao and Amanda Kachurka from the Erie Regional Chamber and Growth Partnership. Jake, thanks again for joining us. What was the impetus for doing the Workforce Delivery System Assessment by Garner Economics?
In 2019, the Chamber hired Garner Economics to do a competitive realities report, a competitive realities and targeted industry analysis. And the competitive realities side of the equation comes in, looked at the economy through the lens of a site selector and said, there's usually about 54 variables that they'll evaluate to determine if you your location. And Erie was positive on 32. Meaning ahead of the curve to comparable markets, comparable markets, and on par on 11, but there are 11 that we were deficient. And one of the areas we were deficient was in preparing our workforce. And they said in that report that their line is talent is the new currency. So if you're going to effectively compete for jobs, both for existing employers as well as new employers looking to make investments, then you need to make sure that your workforce system is producing what is needed by the employers and doing it in an efficient manner. And so that recommendation in the report was you should do a workforce delivery system assessment. You need to look at the educational and workforce development entities in your region and assess what their capacity is presently, their specializations, and that will help you identify areas where there's gaps and needs that are needed. And so we took that recommendation, and while we were doing the report, Garner had just hired Deborah Lyons, who's a former head of workforce development for the state of Georgia, had a deep background and experience. She also worked for ACP or ACT. And we saw her skill set and her capabilities. And so we contracted with Garner to do that workforce delivery system assessment.
What did we learn from their assessment, and what were the recommendations?
You know, overall, it wasn't like there was all negatives, right? There was very sound and support for the higher educational institutions and what they're producing. There is, in fact, good, there's capacity within the K-12 system for career and technical education. So those were positives. But the big ones that came out of it were they looked at Erie and came down to a determination that, you know, number one recommendation was you need to build a bricks-and-mortar community college. And some would say, well, that was a predetermined, and it wasn't. We absolutely cut them free to meet with and talk with people and come up with their own recommendations. And they came and showed data that was very powerful about the growth in other markets just in Pennsylvania and the relationship of did they have a community college or not and Erie. And what you saw were the places that had an active community college were experiencing 5% growth in their economy over a five-year window on an annual basis, 5%. In the Erie market, we were seeing a 2% contraction or loss. And in the for employers specifically, they need to have a go-to organization that can design curriculum on the go. And then the third piece of it is that community colleges are designed as a what they call stackable credential entity. So it's a place to start your higher education career, and it leads you to and creates a pathway for you to get into higher ed. So for Erie, which has a high poverty rate, a lot of people going to a four-year institution is just out of the realm. And some of the trade schools can get expensive as well. But a community college just provides affordable, digestible tuition for individuals to begin that career stacking, you know, that credential stacking process. They also made recommendations relative to creating a overarching coordinating organization within the Erie Regional Chamber to work with all of the existing entities to make sure the left and right hands are coordinated to assist and guide grant writing opportunities on that front and work with employers to make sure that the training is meeting their needs. Talked about collaborating with the school districts on developing a soft skills, a world-class level soft skills training program for high school students, because a lot of employers identified that as a challenge here. The other two recommendations were around continuing to support the Career Street Initiative, which provides orientation to students of all ages about a variety of careers in the Erie market. Supporting the Erie County Career Pathways Alliance, which is part of Erie Together, and that, what the work that they're doing. And then finally, getting to a much better and more refined, efficient communications process of all the tools that are available. There seemed to be a lot of confusion among the employers about assistance for training as well as institutions and who offers what.
You know, as you mentioned, there's big news this week with the passage of the community college. What are your thoughts and reactions?
Well, it was a critical and important step in the process. And of course, we hope that there is no appeal to the determination by the State Board of Education and that it can continue to move forward. The next steps in the process are in the next 60 days now that there's been that approval. Erie County has to come up with a recommended board of trustees that would guide the further development and the build-out of that community college. And then, of course, there's the budget. And you can be approved for a community college, but you got to have money approved in order for you to be successful. So those are the next steps. And I would say that the positive side of this was the really unprecedented collaboration and partnership among the clergy, the African-American community, the business community, the labor community, and the political community foundations to unify behind something and withstand a very long and sometimes frustrating process, but stay on course and get something accomplished that's been a top agenda item for this community probably for the last 18, 19 years.
Jake, what this should mean is more people will stay in this market long term, right?
Absolutely. And what it also does is it enables existing workers who are here who may be in that 35 and higher age group, maybe even 25 and higher, to begin to pursue their continued education and their credentialing. It gives them a digestible, cost-wise, digestible pathway and a flexible pathway that's geared towards someone who's working full-time but isn't done learning, or that has a dream or a vision of what a career they'd like to get into. This gives them the pathway to start pursuing that, and that's exciting. So it's not just about keeping the young here. It's about skill training, skill upgrading, and career building for those who are already here and working.
Let's talk a little about workforce during the pandemic. What have you found out through all of the Chamber's outreach efforts?
You know, the first thing we found out was that employers were very thoughtful about their employees. So in some cases, we had employers that we talked to that said, look, I don't want to lay my people off, but I think they could make more money being laid off. And so they may have taken that route. What we found since then is that employees are communicating with their employers about coming back to work, and their biggest concern is their personal safety. And that makes perfect sense. In a lot of cases, it's because someone's at home who is an at-risk person, could be a parent or a grandparent, could be just a family member that has a health condition. So they're concerned about the safety of going back to work, and they're specifically concerned about interacting with customers. I think that they feel confident that employers will have a safe employment, a safe place in which to work, but they're worried about that. The other is that they have some concerns about childcare, and the interesting one that's come up is concern about sending their kids to school in the fall. That's a huge issue that we are going to have a town hall with educational providers to learn more about that. The reason that's so big is that if you do have an at-risk person at home, you're going to be worried about sending your kids to school where they're going to be exposed to so many other kids, and then they would come home. And if those students stay home, it creates a question mark, not a certainty, but a question mark around will school districts be compensated for a family that says, until there's a vaccine, we're keeping our kids at home, you know, what are the roles and responsibilities of educating that child, and will the school district be reimbursed for it? And it becomes a very big financial issue because you get about $8,500 per student, say, in the Erie School District. Don't quote me on that number, but it's roughly that. And if all of a sudden 200 kids in the Erie School District, which out of 2,000, 12,000 is not an unrealistic expectation, families say, we're not sending them to school, that creates a $1.7 million hole in the budget, potentially. So that's what we've learned. And then we have heard that employees are hesitant. They're like, I'm not coming back till my unemployment compensation runs out, because the effective hourly rate of somebody on unemployment right now with that $600 booster is in the neighborhood of $22 an hour. And so they're kind of making the calculations, and why would I leave my $22 an hour situation to go to something that's going to pay me 10 or 12 or even 14? So a very dynamic environment. Employers are looking at all kinds of scenarios to bring their employees back, recognizing all of those variables. So you can just imagine it's an incredibly complex scenario on every front facing businesses, both employers and employees.
Jake, thanks again for your time. Finally, the pandemic, any thoughts or insights on where we are economically right now?
You know, we've been tracking this since the middle of March and paying attention to it. It was at about 16% unemployment. Overall, what I would say is that from a dollar standpoint, from pure dollars in the community standpoint, I think we're fine. And I mean that because across the country, we've seen savings rates go up significantly because people are getting actually more money in through unemployment. So and a number of our key industries continue to, you know, have people working for the most part full time throughout that. So you've got big hospitals, your insurance, lab tech. I think what we're going to see play out over the next 3 months is going to tell us more about where we really sit. Clearly, the hospitality sector, which is a big part of our economy, probably 12% of the employment and about 7-8% of the total revenue, that got just basically shut down and is just starting to reopen. So that's going to have a big hit. That's going to have a big impact on the employment numbers in the community. But overall, I would say the Erie economy has weathered this pretty good. I don't see as much of devastation here as I think you're going to see in other places. The key will be, and this is the history of Erie, we usually trail into a recession, and we trail out of it. So in other words, in the old days, a recession would hit. We wouldn't feel it right away. We'd feel it 6 months after other places felt it. And then when they were recovered, you know, we'd be 6 months behind them. In this particular case, we all kind of went into recession at the same time. And coming out of it, because we're a component part producing town, I think what we're going to see is I don't think we're going to trail by as much as other places. I actually think we can get back to our normal economy faster, given the nature of this particular recession. And I just want to say, Joe, we have never, anyone who thinks we've lived through something similar to this is mistaken. This is not like anything economically that the U.S. economy has ever experienced. Number one, it's completely covered 100% of the landscape. Number two, every sector is affected. Number three, you add in what's happened to the global oil situation, which is a huge impact on the national economy and the global economy. And then you add in the civil unrest generated by George Floyd's death and the potential ramifications of that relative to a lot of entities restructuring. We are in unprecedented waters. On some levels, I will say it's exciting that so many things are open for change. On a purely economic standpoint, it's a cautious time, and we have to get people comfortable with going back to work, going out and spending their money, and having confidence in the future. It's the only way. So all of us, to a certain extent, have to take a little bit of risk and faith in the future and head out there and start doing business, because that's the only way we're going to get everything back on track, and it's not going to be easy. And so we all got to help each other out and support each other, because this is something that's going to be with us for at least the next 12 months.
Let's bring in Amanda Kaczurka. She's the program director at the Erie Regional Chamber and Growth Partnership. Amanda, let's jump right into it. What is Erie Restart, and can you tell us about the phase one and phase two structure of it?
Sure. So Erie Restart, just to back up a little bit, so when the pandemic really started to hit here in Erie County, we immediately recognized that this was going to cause a lot of problems for businesses. You know, businesses were having to close. And so understanding that eventually on the other side of that, they would have to reopen and there would likely be a lot of considerations on the business's part to be able to do that safely, we saw an opportunity to sort of step into that space. So our CEO, James Grunke, sort of put me in charge of determining what that would look like. So working with some of our other staff members, came up with Erie Restart. So essentially we said, okay, looking at the situation where we are now and now being, you know, this conversation happened back in, I think, late April, we said, so there's probably two pieces to this, right? So the first piece is reopening. How do we help disseminate information from our local health department, from state and federal resources? Because where there was some struggle, I think, early on was that the Erie County Health Department, with the exception of restaurants, didn't really have a direct line of communication into the business community. Why would they? They didn't really need to until all of this happened. So they were looking for some help in disseminating information about what businesses should be doing, you know, especially those that were allowed to remain open, how to keep their employees and their customers safe. So that was really where we saw the first opportunity, which then translated into phase one of Restart, which is reopening. So that process was really geared solely toward how do we help businesses just get their doors open again, whether that's access to reopening guidance, whether that's, you know, putting them in touch with PPE providers, providing education on financial assistance programs. There was a lot to that. And then we said, well, there's going to be another opportunity here because whenever you have these really large disruptive events that happen in our economy, there's always something to be learned from that, right? So we said, you know, we need to have sort of a part two to this, which became the phase two of the program, which we're calling revamp. So the revamp phase is really dedicated to taking that lessons learned approach, looking at the sort of vulnerabilities and gaps that have been uncovered as a result of the pandemic, and how do we best prepare businesses to think ahead? So if we have to deal with this again, they're a little bit better prepared. So that's sort of the phase one, phase two. So we're getting toward the end of phase one as we're finding that businesses are largely being successful reopening if they're allowed to reopen, and we're looking more to the revamp side of things now.
I know the virtual town halls that were held by the chamber went very well. Amanda, what was learned and how will it be implemented?
They were really great. And that as we embarked on the restart process, something that we really wanted to make sure that we were doing was actually listening to the business community and giving them time to give us feedback. Because any of the initiatives or projects or programs that we develop as a result of Restart, we want to be directly in line with the business community's needs. And the only way to figure that out is to actually talk to them. So we did a series of four town halls. We had manufacturing, retail, service businesses, and then we did one for hospitality, restaurants, and tourism-related businesses. I think overall, again, kind of removing the restaurant piece from the scenario because they're going to be the last ones to be able to open fully. Same thing with spas and salons. But by and large, businesses have been able to find the PPE that they need for their employees. They've put some thought and a lot of effort into having their pandemic safety plans and communicating those with their staff. Some really encouraging feedback was that, again, restaurant industry removed from the equation. The majority of the businesses that we talked to felt as though that they would be back at full employment capacity within 6 months, which is great. There are some concerns, I think, as they look to bring employees back about, you know, from the employee's perspective about dealing with customers because, you know, maybe they have a high-risk family member at home, a little bit of concern with schools reopening in the fall. I think most parents are very well aware of how quickly germs tend to travel through daycares and schools. So, of course, that's of concern. And then another area that we uncovered that was interesting and actually came about through a conversation with the health department was that they were seeing businesses that did not have contingency plans in place. What we mean by that is if someone in the business were to be diagnosed or test positive for COVID-19, any employee in the business that they had direct contact with would also have to quarantine for 14 days. That can have a major impact on a business, especially a smaller one, where they may not have very many employees. So we were finding that businesses weren't creating a plan for that to happen. So, you know, spacing their staff shifts apart in a way such that if someone did test positive and some of their fellow employees had to quarantine, the business could still remain operational. So what we don't want to happen is for someone to test positive and for that to cause the entire business to have to shut down because all of the employees have to quarantine. So I think that's an opportunity for the chamber to provide some more education, some more training just to help businesses think through that process. And then I think another area that was interesting was just lack of awareness of state and local capital tools. Lots of people knew about the Paycheck Protection Program, the Small Business Administration's emergency loans, but some of those state and local capital tools did not have a whole lot of awareness around them. So that's, again, another opportunity for us to increase that education and provide more resources to make people aware of those loan programs. So I think, you know, overall, lots of great information that we got from the town halls and have really served to better direct the formation of priorities for all of our working committees. So it was just not necessarily anything overly shocking. Things that we had a pretty good idea of were just confirmed. So it just, you know, reiterated that we're heading in the right direction with all of our working committee priorities.
Finally, Amanda, can you share any updates on the priorities of the working committees?
So we have five working committees. We have business engagement, workforce, government affairs, capital, and marketing communications. So the business engagement working committee, one of their first priorities was just hosting these town hall meetings. So we've done that, which is great. We also think there's a lot of opportunity here to make the town halls a regular fixture as part of something that the chamber offers to the business community as a whole, not necessarily just for members. So that's another priority for the business engagement committee is to sort of assess what that could look like moving forward. I think with the business engagement committee, a lot of their work is going to be driven by the work of some of the other committees. They have the advantage of having a full committee of people who have their own networks, whether that's, you know, on a portfolio basis or they work with clients. Everybody on that committee has a network that they can reach out to with information. So we want to capitalize on that. And I think just, you know, in light of some of the social unrest that's been happening over the last several weeks, we've really looked at distribution of assistance and referrals. And I think historically our reach to the minority business community has been smaller than we would certainly like it to be. So this is an opportunity that we see to really reach deeper into the minority-owned business community and provide resources and help where they need it. So that's another priority for the Business Engagement Committee. On the workforce front, really supporting and addressing the concerns of workers is where they're currently focusing their energy. So addressing things like safety, making sure that the physical spaces that the employees work in are safe, and also working with employers to help provide training to their employees, making sure that everybody's staying safe. Access is another area, and specifically by that we mean things that would cause a barrier to returning to work, such as childcare or transportation. So working with the proper entities to make sure that employees have access to those things so they, you know, their children are taken care of and they have means of getting to work. And then also another area is the sort of concept of business liability protections. I think, you know, we're all returning to work in a brand new world. So there are lots of new concerns So we just, the workforce committee just wants to make sure that both employers and employees understand their rights and feel protected. And the workforce committee is working very closely with our government affairs committee on that. The government affairs side of things, they have a very long list of priorities, but I think first and foremost, the public health strategy is really made the top of the list, specifically focusing on the areas of testing and contact tracing, making sure that we're aware of any resources that can be applied locally and how they would be applied locally through the health department to supplement that effort as much as possible, because as we've seen, that's incredibly important for containing or at least managing the spread of COVID-19. Some small business relief funding. We have, as I mentioned, the Capital Working Committee. So the Government Affairs and Capital Committees are working very closely together. Again, the liability protection legislation, working with the Workforce Committee on that to make sure that everybody understands their rights and is protected as much as possible. Unemployment compensation is another area that we've seen some concern from businesses, you know, with the extra $600 of unemployment compensation. That's causing a lot of concern among employers that their employees don't want to return to work. They're actually making more filing for unemployment than they are working. So, you know, this committee working as much with legislators as possible to look at solutions for addressing that. So is it a matter of, you know, transforming that $600 more into an incentive to return to work? There's a lot to be done there still, I think, but just assessing what the options are. And then also a state business advisory task force. I think there's been a lot of frustration with the communication or lack thereof with the state level, just especially around why Erie County hasn't gone green. I think there's a lot of frustration and anger on the business community's part, and there's a feeling of that communication channel not necessarily being open. So our Government Affairs Committee is really dedicated to facilitating that and hopefully opening those communication channels a bit more with the state. I know that's something that Amy Murdoch on our staff, who is the team captain of the Government Affairs Committee, has been working very, very diligently on, particularly in the last few weeks. And then I think for them, the last major priority, which actually saw some quick results, which was very exciting, was the concept of outdoor seating for restaurants, particularly downtown. That concern came up in a Government Affairs Committee meeting, and John Buchna from the Downtown Partnership and Kathy Rosdick from the city, that conversation was facilitated, and there's you know, been a process where they've looked at how businesses can you know, get permitting or make sure that they're following the correct channels for getting more outdoor seating at their locations. So the city has really worked to expedite that process as businesses are looking to expand their seating outdoors quickly. As far as priorities on the Capital Committee side, because a lot of the local dollars were utilized pretty quickly out of the gate once we jumped into sort of pandemic mode, the Capital Committee is looking more toward the revamp side of things, and a lot of the focus around diversity, equity, and inclusion really has come to a head in the Capital Committee. So looking at the development of guiding principles for different funding entities to use as they're determining who to disseminate dollars to. I think there are some barriers to accessing capital that exist more for minority-owned businesses. So how can we create capital programs that maybe help lower those barriers some? So whether it's, you know, looking at risk tolerance or micro-lending or technical assistance funding, you know, what are some of our options there to provide financial assistance to businesses that really need it?
Thanks for listening to Business Spotlight on Money Radio WPSE. Tune in next week as Logistics Plus is in the Business Spotlight.